Your Honors, it's a matter of fact, incontestable fact, that I have never been convicted of a felony in any court of criminal jurisdiction. The Virginia Medical Board knows this. In fact, they have in hand a judgment from the Colorado Criminal Court dismissing with prejudice the felony charge against me. Yet to this very day, the board trumpets to the entire world that I'm a convicted felon. So the question is, who convicted me? As a matter of law, the Virginia Medical Board has no authority, meaning, of course, subject matter jurisdiction under Virginia Code or the U.S. Constitution. Furthermore, the board violated the full faith and credit of the United States Constitution by reversing the final judgment of the Colorado Court dismissing the felony with prejudice. Lack of subject matter jurisdiction cannot be waived. It renders the original decision void ab initio and all that follows void. I would not be here today but for the unlawful original suspension of my license in 2007. I've been fighting ever since that day. The code that they used to suspend my license is 54.1-2409A, which requires documentation that I had been, past tense, convicted of a felony. They use a minimus entry for accounting purposes to demonstrate that I was convicted. However, that minimus was simply for accounting purposes, as I said, and it has clearly in there that I was referred to diversion for DJNS, deferred judgment and sentencing. And under Colorado law, that requires a conditional guilty plea, which by statute, upon completing those conditions, which occurred over a month prior to the suspension in 2007, that by statute, the court is obligated to, it says, shall dismiss with prejudice and withdraw the guilty plea, which it all has occurred. In May of 2007, when I actually received the order from the medical board, it took about a week or so in the mail to get to me, I had certified court documents from Colorado sent to the medical board and asked them to reverse it at that point in time, saying that this was obviously just a, you know, an error. And they refused to do so. I did repeatedly over the course of that year. They had the certificate of completion version, the applicable statute, and everything at that point in time. The felony was finally dismissed August 19th of 2008 upon motion from the district attorney, and the guilty plea withdrawn, so it was deferred, dismissed with prejudice, and voided, in fact. The board received all of that, but instead of reversing at that point, knowing full well it had no statutory authority, it demanded that in December, months later, I have to start a reinstatement for what would otherwise be a valid license. So I began that, in, as I said, in December of 2008. And again, as far as the felony conviction, the board doesn't really argue against what I'm saying, but rather they say that a guilty plea in Virginia constitutes a conviction. And that's in their opposition at page 10. For this interesting proposition, it cites to the 2012 opinion of this court in Starrs v. Commonwealth.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? Sure. So the guilty plea that they're referring to in Colorado
right.
was in
2005.
So when all of that was overturned by the Colorado court or
right.
dismissed, you had pled guilty, but they
withdrew it.
They essentially allowed you to withdraw your guilty plea, and
correct.
Then the matter was just dismissed at that
correct.
Point.
Correct.
Okay.
And so, under Starrs v. Commonwealth of 2012, which the Virginia Medical Board relies, that was directly reversed by the Supreme Court in 2014, and they rejected the board's position. In fact, from page 13 of the Starrs 2014, which is 287 Virginia 1 at 13, I quote, until the court enters an order adjudicating guilt, it has not exercised its judicial power to render judgment. Thus, under Virginia law, a conditional plea, such as mine, especially one that's already voided out, dismissed and voided, is not considered a conviction either. So the board lacked authority to ever have suspended my license. But the board argues because I didn't directly appeal the 2007 order, which it says cannot be appealed directly, it has jurisdiction and immunity to do whatever it's done to me. when you get rid of the internal conflicts in that particular argument, just looking at Nelson v. Warden of Key Mountain, which in my opening brief I cite on page 22, subject matter jurisdiction is granted by constitution or statute. It cannot be waived. So nothing I could have done or did or didn't do can change the fact that they do or do not have authority to take my license from me. But notwithstanding all of that, I went through with a reinstatement proceeding in 2011. What happened with that is they misused my reinstatement application explanation of my involuntary intoxication defense I had for the criminal charge, which is a complete defense in Colorado. Had I chosen to expose my family to the courts, I should have been acquitted under the Supreme Court ruling in Garcia of 2005 from Colorado, but I chose to make the plea agreement. The board twisted that involuntary nature of the medication use that I have certified expert testimony and that was accepted by the courts in Colorado to twist it into a sanctionable event 7 years later as substance abuse, which doesn't meet the definition the General Assembly has given to substance abuse in the first place. It's the exact opposite. It's without compelling medical reason, precisely the opposite of what happened in my particular case. I almost died from the medication use. It was pretty much side effect after side effect. I coded and had inactivated my license the entire illness, and I did not reactivate my license until I was cleared to do so by all my physicians in December 2005, about a year and a half before the board chose to suspend my license for being a convicted felon, which I'm not. For the board to have acted with actual jurisdiction or statutory authority, they would have had to show that I was a current direct threat to the public in order to suspend my license. As it relates to the practice of medicine. Well, it could have never happened because the entire illness I was inactivated and not practicing medicine. Nonetheless, the 2011 board order promised to restore my license to full and active status. It's what the letter they sent me, full and unrestricted, subject to minimal monitoring. Of course, the whole proceeding should have been ordered as void ab initio under Collins v. Shepard, but the other interesting thing was their findings of fact. When you exclude everything that was past historical from 7-plus years earlier, there was nothing current. No experts on their side, nothing that said that I had a current problem whatsoever. In fact, said no evidence. This is a quote, direct quote, no evidence of psychopathology or substance abuse. Dr. Klaus presents himself clinically and on psychological assessment as a normal individual with negative random testing. So I suppose if you go to the absurd range in saying, well, all physicians could be barred from practicing medicine because at one point in their life they were all incompetent, they were all children, didn't have training. You know, there has to be some currency to it. That's the legal standard. And in fact, and Clark V., the Virginia Board of Bar Examiners from the Eastern District of Virginia in 1995, they say that there's no correlation between past psychiatric treatment and current functional impairment. Again, this was a treatment-induced iatrogenic condition that had resolved 7 years prior to the hearing in 2011, which all of their other findings would be in violation of Title II of the ADA. So the board based its conclusions of law, not on fact, as well as the monitoring part, not on fact, but on their conclusion of law.
Can I ask you, I hate to interrupt, but
sure.
Time goes by so fast in these arguments. Judge Riley Merchant's order that from the April 19, 2017 is the order now before us on appeal, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And he says in there that he finds that the 2013 order has been appealed and is currently before him, but that the 2007 to 2011 orders, and you referred to the 2011 order
right.
several times, well, was not timely appealed and therefore can't be before him.
Well, Collins v. Shepard, if something has lack of subject matter jurisdiction, it can be challenged directly or indirectly or collaterally at any time, and there is no limited time, place, or anything. That's why I've did a motion to void in that court. So also under the RU Rizzo requires a proceeding for my case that I requested because I got unconstitutional strictures put on me months after a direct appeal of the 2011 order could have taken place.
Doesn't the board have subject matter jurisdiction to suspend or revoke the license of a physician?
Only as it relates to the practice of medicine and is specifically specified in code. Yes, they would.
So they did have subject matter jurisdiction in 2005 to revoke your license?
No.
You're just saying that it was improperly revoked?
No, they did not. In 2007, they're saying that I'm a convicted felon. No one has ever said I'm a convicted felon except for them. They are an ERE Commonwealth's attorney. It's a 2003 Virginia Supreme Court case. It says there that that is the control of judicial discretion when you assign the actual guilty plea as opposed to you're prescribing what happened. That's using judicial discretion. That's what they had to do in order to do what they've done. So when I found out about that I couldn't work in any capacity, I had an existing child support order in Colorado I was trying to take care of. Couldn't make phone calls to potential employers. Could not leave the state of Virginia because of HPMP. There's no way to challenge them. So I went back to the board as for a case decision. The board obviously is now saying, well, that wasn't really going to be a case decision. That would be part of the 2013 hearing. But if you look at page 466 in the joint appendix, there it's assigned a case number for my actual case that I put in. And we went back and forth and back and forth, and I was being completely blown off. They defaulted under 4021B, which Rizzo is the only state that the citation that they rely on, did a predecessor statute 8 years, 1998, which 8 years later, the General Assembly removed the preceding requirement for informal fact-finding. So I'll come back.
All right. You have your rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Claudius. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Aaron Barrett on behalf of the Virginia Board of Medicine. There is one appealable issue related to one order that is before this court today, and that is whether the board had substantial evidence to discipline Dr. Claudius in its 2013 order. The other arguments Dr. Claudius makes are waived or barred by sovereign immunity. Substantial evidence supports the board's 2013 order. That order only concerned whether Dr. Claudius violated the terms of his 2011 order. The 2011 order continued the suspension of Dr. Claudius and offered to stay the suspension pursuant to his entry into and compliance with the Virginia Health Practitioners Monitoring Program, which I'll refer to as HPMP. Dr. Claudius testified to the board in 2013 that he stopped calling the drug screen hotline in 2012. He also stopped attending drug screens in 2012. Both of those are requirements under HPMP.
Was that requirement imposed for something other than the conviction? Was there evidence of substance abuse that supported that?
The board's order in 2011, Your Honor, was 5 or 6 pages and had multiple conclusions of law and findings of fact. Dr. Claudius cited a finding of fact that was included in there that was merely the recitation of one of his own experts that he presented in support of his petition for reinstatement. The board captured that expert's testimony in the finding of fact. That doesn't mean that the board gave more weight to that expert's testimony than to its own testifying experts or...
That doesn't answer my question.
Sorry,
is there evidence of substance abuse that the board relied on to suspend his license?
Yes, there was. In 2011, there was. And had Dr. Claudius appealed that, a court on appeal could have delved further into that with the record that was before the board at the time. However, he did not, and... that issue, therefore, is barred by sovereign immunity. Dr. Claudius has many issues in his appeal that have been waived because he failed to raise them to the board at the 2013 hearing. Those include his arguments regarding...
Can I ask you that? You say it's barred by sovereign immunity as opposed to just not being a timely appeal.
There are two separate issues there, Your Honor. His arguments regarding the 2007 mandatory suspension that was issued by the Virginia Department of Health Professions, not the Board of Medicine, and the Virginia Department of Health Professions is not a party here. That issue, all arguments related to that order are barred by sovereign immunity because he, regardless of whether it can be appealed under the APA, which I would argue is an open question, he did not attempt to appeal that. Additionally, any arguments related to the 2011 order and hearing are barred by sovereign immunity because he did not file a timely appeal under the APA.
So your argument is that sovereign immunity applies in the case of a collateral attack on a prior adjudication by an administrative agency?
Yes, Your Honor. And regarding his waived issues, his arguments regarding Virginia Code 2.2-4021 under the APA have been waived. Additionally, his constitutional claims, which include due process claims, full faith and credit clause claims, and constitutional allegations against HPMP, his procedural claims, which include allegations that the board failed to admit evidence, and his statutory authority claims, which include his claims under the Americans with Disabilities Act, none of these issues were raised to the board at the 2013 hearing for a contemporaneous ruling. And even if he had raised these issues, they don't have merit. For example, Virginia Code 2.2-4021 is a statute under the APA that requires a board or agency to make a decision within a certain time frame of 90 days. Dr. Cloutis has confused the definition of a case or a case decision under Virginia Code 2.2-4001 to include a threat of private legal action. Now, that term, threat of private legal action, is in the definition, but it refers to identifying the potential parties to a case or a case decision, not defining what constitutes a case or a case decision. Additionally, Dr. Cloutis's arguments on this point are a bit confused. He points to his attorney's letter of March 2012, which was a threat of private legal action to HPMP and the board, as the case, I suppose in this case, that required some kind of decision by the board. However, in his arguments on brief and before the circuit court, he referred to a letter he sent board staff in November of 2011 that laid out some of his arguments related to the 2007 mandatory suspension. That never threatened any legal action of any kind. Regardless, one of these letters, Dr. Cloutis intends to require the board to submit a case decision that's appealable under the APA. And that produces an absurd result. In that situation, any licensee of any board can send a letter to a board, and the board is then required to issue essentially a case decision with no fact-finding proceeding, no attempt to investigate matters, and they also have to look at every communication to them as a requirement for a case decision. And even if that were accepted practice, it would not retroactively change a final agency decision, in this case the 2011 order, that was never appealed. Dr. Cloutis has also not articulated a constitutional claim under the APA, even if these issues have not been waived. There's no due process violation alleged here. Dr. Cloutis was provided a hearing at a meaningful time and in a meaningful manner in 2013. He hasn't alleged otherwise. Dr. Cloutis hasn't articulated a claim under the Full Faith and Credit Clause. The 2013 order did not reference or mention the Colorado Criminal Court order and did not make a finding that he was a convicted felon. Dr. Cloutis has not alleged an actual Full Faith and Credit Clause claim with relation to the 2013 order. Dr. Cloutis has presented constitutional allegations against HPMP, but HPMP is not a party here. It is not an agent of the board. Statutorily, it is a separate agency. It's not a separate agency, but it's a separate portion of DHP.
But is it true that the Board of Medicine is requiring him to be monitored by, or I'm not sure I'm using the correct verb here, but be responsible to or monitored by HPMP?
Only if he wanted a stay of the suspension of his order, Your Honor, of his suspension. He had the choice not to enter HPMP, and the suspension would have just remained on his license until he petitioned the board for reinstatement. However, he activated the terms. He entered HPMP, and under that premise that he was going to stay in and remain compliant with HPMP, the board summarily put a stay on the suspension of his license so that this monitoring program, when it determined that he was ready and able to return to practice, based on their set policies, then he could practice and the board could be confident that a physician was out there that was safe and competent to practice. It's fairly standard. It's used as an avenue to get physicians back to work, not as a punishment. Dr. Cloutis also has made some ADA claims under his compliance with statutory authority arguments. However, he's only made claims related to the 2011 order and proceedings. So even if those issues had not been waived, under Virginia, there's a one-year statute of limitations for ADA claims. He didn't raise these issues until his brief in support of his petition for appeal of the 2013 order. So all of these arguments were raised after the one-year statute of limitations had run. Additionally, his procedural claims lack merit. He claims that it was procedural error for the board to, quote, fail to recognize that HPMP recommended that Cloutis withdraw from HPMP. However, this is supported nowhere in the record. His record citation in his opening brief in support of his claim that the board improperly excluded evidence is actually to a document that was before the board in evidence. It was part of Commonwealth's Exhibit Number 4. The other evidence that Dr. Cloutis alleges that the board improperly excluded was never presented to the panel. Dr. Cloutis cites no place in the record where he attempted to admit this evidence and it was denied. I'll state again that his attacks on the 2007 mandatory suspension issued by an entity that's not before this court today and the 2011 order of the board that he did not appeal are barred by sovereign immunity. I've answered the remainder of Dr. Cloutis' arguments on brief. Unless the court has additional questions, the board requests that this court uphold the circuit court order and affirm the order of the board.
Any further questions from Ms. Barrett?
Thank you.
Dr. Cloutis, you have your rebuttal time.
I would ask that this court please read the briefing as well. Unlike what she said, if you read the orders, there is nothing from 2011 that has anything that would support any current problem. Despite what she says. If you look at Rizzo at at 857, they do not get sovereign immunity for the interpretation of the default statute, nor the operation of that particular statute. They fail to ever respond. They're misrepresenting Rizzo just like they did STARS. I can't believe that they got away with citing to law that has been directly reversed. To me, that is just profoundly wrong. But that nonetheless has happened. There's no way for me to really bring up some of the issues she talks about in 2013 because of the ruling in limine. You speak about this, you lose your lawyer. You're out of here. It's either you did or you didn't continue with HPMP. That was the only question I was allowed to talk about. I did slip in some stuff about my November letter and the correspondence as best I could. But that was all I could get on the record. Again, this is all void ab initio. She's wrong about 2409. If you look at it, the board has discretion at subsection D to reinstate my license without further examination. That's not DHP. It's the board may do so. I requested the board do that, and I cited to that in my November letter that they call a case. I showed you the 466. They know that I don't have substance abuse. They know that I'm not a convicted felon. The only reasons for the monitoring, Dr. Silverman, my privately hired, by the way, expert, made an illegal self-referral, and they knew it at the 2000. I was the only person in the room that did not know that at the time. I couldn't find out about it until 90 days later. That's 2 months after the time to directly appeal. That's why I did the request for a case decision, or petition for a case decision. They're telling me now, oh, that's not the way it's done. Well, they trumpeted a different tune when they gave it a case number, and they were referring to it as a case between my lawyer and the deputy executive director. I've cited it in my record at 413, 409, and 415A, or 415 number 4. So there was no, like I said, there was no way for me to possibly know that that would be an unconstitutional application of that order in time to appeal it. So sovereign immunity cannot apply to that, especially given everything else. Then when they papered over in 2013 unconstitutional acts of mine under Collins v. Shepard, that mode of procedure also rendered everything absolutely void at the proceeding itself. So that's pretty much where I stand today. I appreciate your consideration.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Cloutis. We will greet Dr. Cloutis and Ms. Barrett, and